G'day, trendsetters. This is episode 649 of the Trendsmove podcast. My name is Tim Meg, and if you have a question for the show, jump on through to the website, trendsmove.com, or send me through an email, tim@trendsmove.com. Now, a couple of days ago, I was just buggered. It was at night time. I'm just buggered. All I wanted to do was just go to bed. And it was like late at night, but like 7:30 at night. All I wanted to do was be in bed. But I had a gym session I had to do. And luckily for me, on two accounts, my gym's at home. So there is no traveling. And Metallica's just released their new album. So it's been this way now for a few solid years that whenever I'm not feeling motivated or driven or, you know, it becomes a chore to do something, my go-to music to get me through whatever it is that has to be got through is Metallica. I always put Metallica on, and we do it together. And so Metallica's new album, I hadn't heard it at this stage. I've downloaded it, but didn't hear it, haven't heard it. So I thought, bugger, you know, this is good. I'm going to listen to Metallica. I'm going to do this gym session. She'll be sweet. Anyway, I finished the gym session. 43 minutes. It was either 42 or 43 minutes on the watch. You know, you clearly can't stop a gym session or any kind of session at like 43. So I'm going to go to 45. And so I'll do some shoulder shrugs. So I'll grab a dumbbell in each arm. It wasn't on the program with this, but shoulder shrugs are nice for if you're on a time trial bike and, you know, if you've been in there, you haven't been on the bike that long, you've had a bit of a break or you're just building up the time and you start getting a sore neck and sore shoulders, generally shoulder shrugs, standing up, put a dumbbell in each arm, start shrugging the crap out of your shoulders, that generally helps quite a lot with that. And I haven't been on my time trial bike for a little bit, and so I thought I might do some shoulder shrugs. That makes sense to me. And so I'm there humming and ahhing with my shoulder shrug, boom, 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 and all of a sudden I hear click, and I thought, oh crap, I mean, you know, my left shoulder's just, something's happened. And so I dropped my dumbbells, I should say, and I'm feeling around, it's the thick muscle part. And depending what sort of injury you get and where it is, it depends if you should use ice or what you should do. All I wanted to do is be in bed at this time, and I was just soaking up bloody 2 to 3 minutes so I can press stop on my watch so I can have a nice even number. And so I thought, well, being a middle of soft muscle, I don't think ice is going to be the best thing for it. I might just, you know, relax and just go to bed and cop it sweet. And little nigglies pop up every now and again in our sport, and you sleep it off and you come good the next day or two. So I go to bed, I wake up the next day, and I can hardly move my shoulders. It felt like the exact same pains I was getting when I broke my collarbone in 2015-ish or thereabouts, 2 days before bloody Ironman of all times to break your collarbone. And it was the exact same pain I was getting at that. Anytime I'd have sharp movements, move my arm slightly in any direction, these sharp pains in my shoulders. But it's not bone. It was definitely muscle. And I'm feeling back there. And it's like somebody has just inserted a granddaddy bonker right into my shoulder, right into the muscle of my shoulders. It was great. Like a big golf ball was sitting in there. And I'm thinking, crap. And any movement I can't move. I've got to walk around with my left hand in my pocket so to restrict movements. And so I pull out the physio cream and I start massaging it real deep. I start off light and deep. And if people get this sort of stuff wrong with, you know, they use massage cream, they just put it on the skin, little rub, 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 and walk away. You've got to massage. You're using that more of a lubricant than anything to really get deep into that muscle. And so I did it. So I did this thing where I'd set my alarm for 2 hours every 2 hours, and I would massage that shoulder, in particular the bloody great big ball of bloody granddaddy bonker that's sitting there inside it, for 5 minutes every 2 hours. And I did that for 2 days straight, but it was about 8 hour. It was the eighth hour into day one of doing this, and before I started feeling I can start moving my arm around a little bit. It was crazy, and it wasn't till halfway through today that I've now got full range of motion back again into my shoulder, and the big lump is no longer anywhere near what it used to be. It's still hard, and I'm still massaging it every 2 hours. I set my alarm, so you know there's 7-8 times a day that I'm really diving deep into this bloody shoulder of mine, all because I didn't want to finish the gym session 2-3 minutes earlier than I needed to. But bloody crazy, jeez, it hurt like hell. Anyway. Today's question comes from Jonathan, who writes, "In general, my understanding is that caffeine increases athletic performance. For an Ironman, wouldn't this be detrimental over the course of the race? I assume it would cause your heart rate to be higher and therefore, over the course of the race, increase overall exertion." So, it's been studied a fair bit, and when I got into doing when I first started working with Ironman, not Ironman, God, when I started working with Alan Pittman, he would get me to take no doses, try it just before a race, try it, you know, at 90 k's on the bike or something like that. It was, I'm working off distant memory, and I barely remember what I had for lunch today, so it's not good. So it would be experimenting with no dose, because he says it's going to keep you mentally alert more. And then eventually, I was never a fan of no dose. Oh, that was horrible stuff. And so I switched to, I started taking like a Red Bull just before the swim. And some caffeinated tablets and stuff like that. No, I did all sorts of little different types of experiments, gels, Red Bull halfway through the bike, halfway through the run, and I started working. I'll backdate. So when we were trialing these no doses, Alan Pittman was getting me to do, I started working with this nutritionist in Melbourne, and I told him about it, and he said, no, don't be taking any caffeine. Oh, that will cause cramps. And I just took him for his word and moved on with the rest of my life. But Alan Pittman set me straight on that too, and so I got back into the caffeine game. And so I'm all over the show here. So there's been a lot of studies, a lot of research, a lot of info done on this, and so. And because I'll learn stuff generally, and if I don't write it down, I forget it. So I actually do have a fair few notes on caffeine in my OneNote. And when I first started coaching, I'd have these black books, and I'd write down all these notes from podcasts or books or blogs or YouTube videos or whatever. And I'd write all this stuff down. I'd have a series of books, and then I tried putting them onto a Word document. Anyway, these days I have a OneNote, which is the greatest thing on earth, because I can just type in the word caffeine and all my notes pop straight up. And so your theory sounds right, but we've had too much information on the good outweighs the bad with it. So for instance, on general, and these are generic numbers here, 3.4 milligrams per kilo of body weight you could probably aim for the day, but you want to max that out. Try not to go over 400 milligrams in the day. However, I do have my notes here that Jan Frodeno takes 100 milligrams of caffeine per hour, and I have in brackets, this is a lot. I don't need to put that in brackets, because that's a hell of a lot to be consuming per hour. He's obviously done a crap load of testing, and it works. But for instance, it has some benefits caffeine will actually have. So for instance, caffeine has been shown to spare muscle glycogen stores, and so you're using more fats as fuel, and which is if you look at the demands for Iron Man, this is what you're talking about, isn't it? You could do Iron Man or half Iron Man. Either way, it's still very applicable for Iron Man. Yeah. If you're to go into an Iron Man and be very carb dependent, the run's probably not going to be that friendly to you. Yeah, there's going to be severe breakdowns along the way. You want to, if it was a sprint distance triathlon or Olympic distance triathlon, you can be glycogen dependent, as you know, and still perform really well. But when we're talking about over an Ironman, you're going to be using burning more carbs than you're going to be able to consume, and so you need to teach your body to burn fat over an Ironman. Use that in particular on the bike, so you get off the bike with your glycogen stores as good as, you know, as full as possible. And so just so you can run that marathon. Now, and to go into, you know, I can go into a little bit more with the whole you know, how to become more fat adapted, but generally with endurance athletes, the more volume we put in, the more natural we better we get at burning fats. But diet does help as well greatly. But anyway, that's beside the point. So, but if you look at the demands of that Ironman, as I was saying before, you want to be burning more fat. So it just makes sense for an event like Ironman. So caffeine does play a little bit into that. What also it plays into a massive part of it is, out of all the, you know, out of a lot of studies, the biggest improvement we see is in that fatigue state, the fatigue index. I think it's actually called generally with performances, the thing that breaks down more, the quickest, is going to be that head. Well before the body, the muscles, the legs, and all that shut down, the head's going to shut down well and truly before you ever get a chance where your legs are just going to completely stop. And so if you can keep yourself mentally fresh and mentally focused, quite often the pain you're getting from the legs, for instance, is secondary, because you're generally in that zone. But and so caffeine plays a major role in that. So to say, you know, let's say you're taking a gel every 20 minutes. One of those gels every hour or every hour and 20 might be a caffeinated gel, for instance. And you'd want to maybe start before the race, whether you're waking up and having a coffee or have a cuppa or so, and then get the caffeine going. And then there's also if you reduce the amount of caffeine in the week leading into the race, and so when you start taking caffeine on race day, you get that bigger boost out of it as well. I know a lot of people that just wouldn't be able to do that. It's like, caffeine first, please, before we worry about taking on any race. But I get what you mean, but there's too much evidence indicating there's more benefits with caffeine than without it, for instance, especially when we're talking sports performance, and especially when we're talking something as ridiculous to Ironman. But having said all that, you do need to practice with it. Just saying I have a cuppa each morning and a cuppa at lunch isn't probably going to be the best the preparation. So picking those long sessions, the long sessions with intervals or hard sessions, and throwing a bit of caffeine to make sure you're going to be all right with that. Getting caffeine, if you're taking it, if you're like me who has a Red Bull just before the swim, making sure you do that before a swim session to make sure you're going to be all right with it, because what works really, really well for me may work really, really bad for you. So test, 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 And when you think you've got it down right, test again. If you guys have any other questions, jump on through to the website, trainsmove.com. Until next episode, hooroo.